tactics, actions tantamount to arrests without probable cause, failure to apprise rights of against self-incrimination, and more. And clearly, the ATF form letter that has been displayed raises serious questions about the agency's enforcement tactics in cases connected with the Richmond Gun Show and other enforcement actions in which it was used. And, Mr. Chairman, has this letter been entered into the record? It has? Okay, please. Mr. Chairman, this issue is not about gun control. You and I have different views about that that issue, but there are serious allegations about the right of law-abiding citizens exercising their rights. Some obviously want to change the law, and with gun shows, I think a lot can be done. But until the law is changed, the law is the law. And so we have to look at these allegations as they affect law-abiding citizens. Reports indicate that there was a large number of law enforcement officials. Allegations. It's not clear exactly how many have been convicted or what happened with those arrests, but there's a way to have a sting operation that's legal. This apparent dragnet effort is not the way it ought to be done. My interest is to investigate this matter, determine whether or not there's evidence of abusive investigatory or other enforcement tactics, and if so, to work with ATF and other agencies involved to see how these practices can be stopped and that proper procedures can be implemented to prevent occurrences in the future. We know how to run sting operations legally. You have to show probable cause and that it can be done, but you ought not just stop people without probable cause and without an indication of guilt. If, on the other hand, there are no problems, I'll be pleased to see that the actions of the ATF and other agencies have been vindicated and that the allegations turned out not to be true. However, from media reports and the concerns expressed by persons attending or hearing about the Richmond Gun Show enforcement activities, even if the actions are found not to be improper, we certainly have a problem with appearances that need to be worked on relative to how that's consistent with our Constitution.
I thank the gentleman from Virginia, and I say to each of the members, I appreciate you all being here, and all members' opening statements will be made a part of the record. Permit me to revert to the markup momentarily. I think I failed to note that there was, in fact, the presence of a reported quorum. There were at least 10 members here at the time we did that. It's the practice of the subcommittee to swear in all witnesses appearing before it. So if you witnesses would please stand and raise your right hands. Do each of you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give this subcommittee shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Let the record show that each of the witnesses asked in the affirmative, and you may be seated. In addition to the witnesses, we also welcome those in the audience, indicating obviously your interest in this matter. We have four distinguished witnesses with us today. Our first witness is Miss Annette. Is it pronounced Jealous? Jealous? Jealous. Hard G. Annette Gellis, owner of Showmasters Gun Shows, a family-operated business. Miss Gellis has successfully managed the company for the past 10 years, averaging approximately 15 shows. In biology from the University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown. Our second witness today is Mr. James LaLine. Is that correct pronunciation, Mr. LaLine? A gun salesman from Colonial Heights, Virginia. Mr. LaLine has been working for a gun dealer for the past year. He is a frequent attendee of gun shows and was present at last year's Richmond Gun Show when he was questioned by ATF agents and a Virginia State Trooper. Our third witness is Mr. John White, who is the owner of Gunsmith in Lyndhurst, Virginia. He also participated at the Richmond Gun Show being examined by today's hearing. Mr. White is a retired law enforcement officer with nearly 30 years of service in the Commonwealth of Virginia. He served as a sergeant with the Albemarle County Police Department Patrol and Investigations Division. Previously, he served on the Federal Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force as a Special Deputy U.S. Marshal. Mr. White received his law enforcement certification in 1980 from the Central Shenandoah Criminal Justice Training Center. Our final witness today is Ms. Suzanne McComas, a licensed private investigator. Previously worked as an on-air consultant for Fox News, Court TV, and MTV. Additionally, Ms. McComas worked as a cold case homicide investigator for America's Most Wanted. Now, I noticed, Mr. Forbes, I think he was here. Mr. Scott, I say to you, there's a bevy of Virginia citizens in the hearing room today, so you need to be on your best behavior. I don't know whether in your district or not.
That's hard to do.
But it's good to have you all here. Folks, let me reiterate what I said earlier. There is, with certainty, a vote that will come down at 5:30. If you all could comply with the red light that appears before you, when that red light appears, the ice on which you are skating is thin. That means your 5 minutes have expired. There will be an amber light that will appear, illuminate, telling you have 1 minute to wrap up. So if you all could comply with that, we would be appreciative. And Mrs. Gellis, we will start with you. If you'll activate your mic, yes, and pull it closer to you.
All right. Mr. Chairman, my name is Annette Gellis of Showmasters Gun Shows. I would like to provide a brief statement concerning the events surrounding the Richmond Gun Show, August 13th and 14th, 2005, at the Richmond International Raceway. By way of background, I have been the sole manager and proprietor of Showmasters for 10 years. Showmasters is a family-owned business that began as Old Dominion Shows in 1971. My father and mother began the Roanoke Valley Gun Show and Old Dominion Gun Collector Society 34 years ago. Over the years, we have produced thousands of shows in Virginia, West Virginia, and Maryland. We are a family-oriented business with a conservative customer base. We allow no profanity, pornography, explosive, or smoke devices, so that the show is appropriate for families with children. Many of the exhibitors are retired or active duty military or law enforcement. Many are just average citizens, hobbyists, knife collectors, coin collectors, holster manufacturers, booksellers, and police suppliers. To ensure the public and exhibitors are safe, we check the guns at the door to make sure that they're inoperable, and we tie them. We also make all exhibitors tie their guns. We provide security for 24 hours.
You're suspended, you say tie the guns?
Yeah, we have cables that we provide that I give to my security. And we check all the guns,
make
sure they're unloaded and in time so they don't work. And we make all the exhibitors do that, too. ATF and other law enforcement personnel have always attended the shows, not in great numbers like in the August show, but we would recognize them, one or two, walking through and as customers and sometimes, I'm sure, as investigators on official business. They are usually friendly, professional, and not aggressive towards the public or exhibitors. However, at the Richmond Gun Show on August 13th and 14th, 2005, at least 45 law enforcement officers, including ATF, Virginia State Police, Henrico County Police, and Richmond City Police, were assigned to the show. These officers were acting under ATF's direction and were present in the building on Saturday, August 13th, 2005. According to Brian Swan, the acting resident agent in charge with ATF Richmond Area Office at the time, and Donna Tate, who's the Virginia State Police in charge of the gun show's background checks. This was an ATF Virginia State Police task force. I was told by two uniformed Henrico County Police officers that there were at least 14 other Henrico County Police that were present on Saturday in plain clothes. This enormous law enforcement presence was reflected throughout the weekend. 66 marked and unmarked law enforcement vehicles were on the lot at 10 a.m. on Sunday morning. The numbers of Maricopa County Police at the main entrance before the fence fluctuated all day, but on average there were two or three vehicles at all times. 400 Henrico County Police and Richmond City Police were assigned in the field to assist at the show. I was told that there are a total of 475 Henrico County and Richmond City Police officers. Mr. Chairman, you might ask the purpose for this operation was it explained to me as the show promoter. It was not. Instead, here is what I observed. People were approached and discouraged from purchasing guns. Before attempting to purchase, they were interrogated and accused of being in the business without a license, detained in police vehicles, and gun buyers' homes were visited by police and much more. An example of what happened is as follows. One individual was simply pulled aside from the table in the middle of a purchase. He actually was standing at the table doing the paperwork, and an ATF agent came up to him and said, "What do you want to buy that gun for?" And then the gentleman tried to ignore him, and the agent said, "You need to step over here." And he said, "You know, I'm an ATF agent. You need to step away from the table. What do you want to buy that gun for? You have no business with that gun." All weekend long, people were interrogated in a similar manner at the table in the concession area just outside the ATF command post exit door. Every person who tried to buy a gun at the gun show had a residency check done. According to Special Agent Swan, the residency check consisted of having a marked police vehicle sent to the purchaser's home to check if the person trying to buy a gun actually lived where the identification indicated, usually a Virginia driver's license and or another form of identification with a matching address. At this point, the purchaser had not yet been run through the background check, and therefore there was no evidence present that would indicate the identification presented was correct or incorrect, and no way to ascertain if the individual had a criminal background check or a criminal record. As for any real evidence of lawbreakers at the show, here's what we know so far. Two persons with warrants for arrest were identified by NICS, just as they would have been if the ATF had not been there. Normally, Virginia State Police are assigned to the show and they'll arrest the individuals. This time, only one got arrested and the other one left because of the delay of the residency check.
Now, your time is expired. You wrap up, Ms. Gill.
All right. What was achieved at the show was it devastated my public attendance. Normally, I'll have 4,000 people. 2,000 people came, which cost me about $14,000 that show. The next show, again, I only had had less than 2,000, 1,800 at that show, and it cost me another $14,000, and we believe it's because of all the publicity of this event. So it's had a great impact on me. It also had a large impact on our exhibitors, at least 300,000, because people didn't want to bring in guns, and people didn't want to come in with all those police in the parking lot. And basically what I would like to know is how is it going to be prevented again?
Thank you, Ms. Gill.
Thank you.
And incidentally, folks, when we're cutting you off at the red light, we have examined your written statements. Fairly familiar with them. They will be re-examined, so don't think we're shucking you aside. Mr. LaLonde.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the subcommittee. My name is James LaLonde, and I live in Colonial Heights, Virginia. It is a great honor for me to be here today at this oversight hearing on the gun show enforcement. I am currently employed by a Virginia gun dealer as a salesman and was present at the Richmond Gun Show August 13 through 14, 2005. As an avid gun enthusiast and shooter, I usually attend as many gun shows as I possibly can. I decided to attend the Richmond Gun Show to see if I could sell a couple of firearms and some parts that I had. Had I known what was going to transpire, I would not have attended the show. I had been at the gun show for a few hours after selling one antique rifle, one handgun, and a rifle stock. I was looking over some rifle parts at one of the tables when I was approached by a man who claimed he was an ATF agent, who I later found out was Agent Jared McComas, and a Virginia State Trooper who was Trooper Ingram. At no time did Agent McComas show me any identification. Agent McComas said he wished to talk to me and stated that I wasn't being charged with anything and that he didn't want to make a scene. Myself, Agent McComas, and Trooper Ingram proceeded to walk over to a side by the entrance in the building where the show was being held. Agent McComas again stated I was not being charged with anything, but began interrogating me. The first question Agent McComas asked me was, "We see you at a lot of gun shows. Are you in the business of buying and selling firearms?" To which I answered, "No, sir. These are my personal firearms." Again, Agent McComas said, "Well, we see you at every gun show. Are you sure you're not buying and selling guns as a business?" Again, I told him that these were out of my personal collection. To which Agent McComas replied, "Well, because we see you at all the gun shows, we think you are, and you should get a business license to do so. It is not that hard." When I tried to explain to Agent McComas the reason they see me at all the gun shows might be because I work for an FFL dealer and work at those shows, Agent McComas replied, "Are you walking around at gun shows buying and selling guns for the dealer you work for?" I told him no, that I was there for myself and that I had some guns I didn't shoot and wanted to sell. Again, Agent McComas insisted that they saw me at all the gun shows, and again I told him that I worked for an FFL dealer at gun shows and maybe that's why they see me at every show. Agent McComas again asked if I was working for the FFL dealer, and again I told him I was there for myself. This type of round and round and pointless questioning went on for about another 15 to 20 minutes. At some point, I cut off Agent McComas and asked Trooper Ingram what he needed me for. He told me that my driver's license had been suspended and that he needed to issue me a notification of suspension. Trooper Ingram, Agent McComas, and myself went to my car so I could put a firearm I was carrying into its case, then went with Trooper Ingram to his patrol car. I sat in the front seat of the patrol car as Trooper Ingram wrote up the notification. As he was writing the notification, I asked him what my license had been suspended for. He told me it came up on the computer as a non-traffic suspension and couldn't give me any more information. This took approximately 30 to 40 minutes. During this time, Agent McComas was continuing his line of interrogation, asking me how many guns I owned, when was the last time I purchased a gun, etc., etc., etc. It had gotten to the point where Trooper Ingram asked Agent McComas if he would stop so that he could finish. Trooper Ingram was then able to answer all my questions as best he could and then told me it was okay to get out of the patrol car. As I was stepping out of the patrol car, Agent McComas immediately continued with his interrogation with the same line of questioning as before, over and over. As soon as I received notification for the suspension form from Trooper Ingram, I told Agent McComas if I wasn't being charged with anything, then I must be free to go. I later learned that the suspension of my driver's license was due to an error. When I got over the initial shock of what had just happened, I'd spoken with Ms. Gellis, and I went to speak with Mr. Brian Swan, who was the lead agent. When I asked him if I could speak with Agent McComas, I was quite rudely asked, "What for?" When I told him that I was considering seeking legal counsel, he responded in a very loud tone, "What for? We see you at all the gun shows." I told him that I thought my rights had been violated and that I might seek legal action. I had been waiting approximately 10 minutes when both Agent McComas and Agent Swan walked up to me. I asked Agent McComas for his badge number, to which he responded, "We don't have badges." I then asked for contact information from him at the ATF and told him that I may be seeking legal counsel. After some talking between Agents McComas and Agent Swan, they agreed to write down some contact information for themselves. It was about this time that I noticed the shirt on Agent McComas was wearing had profanity emblazoned across the back and asked if it was customary for ATF agents to wear profanity while in public, where women and children could see it. To which Agent McComas replied, "It is customary for the ATF to wear anything they want to when they are undercover." I told him that I was offended and was sure that there were others who attended the show who were offended also. I found this whole incident to be disheartening and rather humiliating. Never in my life have I been made to feel so violated, and this is not a feeling that I will soon forget. I am a law-abiding citizen that has gone through background checks that were approved to be able to work on military installations, a background check that was approved for a concealed carry weapons permit in the state of Virginia, a background check that was approved by the ATF itself to be able to sell firearms for an FFL in the state of Virginia. I am as far from the criminal element as a person can be, and yet I was singled out for harassment by ATF agent McComas and ATF agent Swan, who was the lead agent.
If you could wrap up, Mr.
I feel that these two agents went far beyond the limitations of their jobs and that they should be under investigation.
Thank you, Mr. Levine. Ms. McComas, my curiosity prompts this question.
No.
I assume that the agent is not known to you, Ms. McComas. Very well. I breathe easier now. I beg your pardon? Mr. White, recognized for 5 minutes.
Yes, sir. I'm John White. My wife and I own and operate The Gunsmith, which is a federally farmed licensed dealership. We value the ATF being available to us at the gun shows to quickly answer any firearms law questions that come up at the shows. We appreciate the ability to have access to the ATF at the shows and point out suspicious situations as they arise so these situations can immediately and appropriately be investigated. We have personally enjoyed benefits of the ATF presence at the gun show because prior to the strong ATF presence, there was a large gang presence at the Richmond shows. We don't want to return to the days where the gangs felt free to mingle with legitimate purchasers, and we credit the ATF with bringing the current business atmosphere to the shows in the Richmond area. Early activity at the shows was entirely appropriate within the law. However, it appeared as time went on, the ATF was joined by personnel from other law enforcement agencies who were outside their span of control. As resources were added, both financial and personnel, the mission activity seemed to continuously expand to try and keep everyone busy. We think it would be a mistake to remove the ATF presence from the gun shows, especially over this one lapse. We and most of the licensed dealers would much rather be able to work with the ATF and be forced to work around the more unreasonable methods. We would like to see a cooperative relationship with the ATF on criminal history checks and address verifications. We would specifically recommend a detailed action plan for the ATF at each show and a clear division of labor for outside agencies so the ATF is not held accountable for the actions of officers whom they have no control. This plan of action should include that an experienced supervising agent always be present at the show. There should be more scrutiny and attention given to the parking lots of these gun shows where many gun transactions take place outside of the scrutiny of the gun show and without any criminal history checks or address verification requirements. There should be greater scrutiny on private collection dealers within the show who do not have a federal firearms license. These dealers are also exempt from the criminal background checks verification and do no paperwork. These private collectors often have suspiciously large revolving stock for a true private collection. Any thinking criminal or straw purchaser is going to buy a gun in a parking lot or from these dealers rather than go through the paperwork. All the law enforcement agencies should respect the rights and privacy of the majority of the customers who are at the shows for honest purposes. Honest citizens should not be punished for the actions of the few. There should be greater attention paid to enforcing laws without abridging the rights of the many legitimate attendees of the gun shows.
I commend you, Mr. White. You finished well ahead of time.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. McComas, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, sir. I'm Suzanne McComas, a private investigator licensed in New York State. I work on contract for the National Rifle Association. I work on contract for the National Rifle Association doing field investigations in cases where they feel there's an issue of an individual's Second Amendment rights being infringed. To date, I've done over 120 cases for the organization. The NRA sent me to Richmond, Virginia in November to investigate the dozens of complaints they'd received from members who had attended, the dealers at the show, as well as the organizers of the August Gun Show at the Richmond Raceway. There were complaints about massive law enforcement presence, residency checks, and minority buyers being followed, pulled over, and their legally purchased guns seized without any due process. In the particular case of Ikea Parker and Marcus Holland, Ikea is a 27-year-old African-American lady, single mother, who works as a mortgage processor. She went to the gun show in December 2004 to buy a small handgun for personal protection. Marcus Holland is a 24-year-old African-American young man who's also employed full-time and has a valid concealed carry permit from the state of Virginia, so she took him along because he was an eligible gun owner. After her purchase, during which she did pass a background check, they left the show and were immediately began followed by a police car until they turned onto I-95, where they were pulled over by no less than 4 police vehicles. They were held on the side of the road for over an hour. The ATF agent told them he had enough evidence to arrest them right then and there for a straw purchase violation, even though both of them were legal gun owners. Both Ikea and Marcus had their guns confiscated and were ordered to appear at the ATF office in Richmond the next day. On Monday, they were there for over an hour of interrogation. They were never read their rights at any point, and they were finally let go and their weapons returned when the agent decided he could not pursue the case. Ikea was humiliated and absolutely terrified by what she was accused of, as it could cost her her career in the financial industry and financial stability for she and her daughter. I also found 4 other minority individuals who had similar experiences, but quite frankly, out of fear of retaliation, they cannot bring themselves to go public to this body or anyone else about their treatment by the ATF. No amount of coaxing is going to bring them public. Just off my written statement, I'd also like to say that they initially did have arrests at the shows that they went to early on. And any good law enforcement officer would know, just as a traffic cop doesn't set up the speed trap at the same place on the same road at the same time day after day, all the speeders know where it is. You need to move your trap. And instead of that, they just stayed in the same place. They had no arrests, no convictions that I'm aware of, even though we've asked them to produce their conviction rates. We have yet to see evidence of a single conviction from any of the arrests at these shows. Instead, they impacted financially on the organizers. They terrified people. They went to their neighbors and asked them if they knew their next-door neighbor was at the gun show buying a gun. They held up the NICS system in doing background checks, which is a clear violation of the FBI guidelines. They are not to cross over into GOJ work at all. That didn't seem to deter them whatsoever, and I don't think they would have stopped to this day if somebody hadn't complained to Mr. Scott's office. During my investigations, we did check gun shows across the country, and we found that in Pittsburgh, the firearms task force there that's also implemented by the ATF, instead of doing residency checks immediately, they're collecting the 4473 with the purchaser's address on it, and they go knock at the door about a week later and ask you to produce the gun that you bought. There's absolutely no process involved. There's no reason for them to do it. If you cannot produce the gun, they ask you for the sale paperwork. If you refuse to produce the paperwork, they put you under arrest for a straw purchase. When I asked them what their criteria was, And when I asked them what their criteria was for the people that they collected the 4473s on at the Pittsburgh show, the answer I got back was, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. That's all we need. Translation, under 30 and black, period. That's all they're looking for. Anyone that meets that criteria, they're doing a follow-up on them. There's absolutely no other rhyme or reason in place for what they're doing. Thank you.
Ms. McComas, you alluded to straw purchase. For the record, define a straw purchase.
A straw purchase would be if Mr. White was illegal to own a firearm, he would give me the money. I'm not saying John would do that. He would give me the money, and I would go buy the gun for him and then give it to him. So I would mark down on the 4473 that it was for my own use.
I got you.
And then I would give him the handgun and probably make a couple $100 in the deal.
I knew that, but I wanted the record to reflect it. Parker person to whom you refer without objection, a copy of the affidavit will be made a part of the record, as will 4 additional statements that will be forthcoming. Folks, thank you for your testimony. Now, as I said before, there will be a 5:30 vote here. We apply the 5-minute rule to us as well. So if you all could keep your answers tersely, and if we can, we can move along here. Ms. McComas, I think you indicated your investigation indicated that no rights were read to anyone whose weapons had been seized. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I couldn't find anyone who said their rights had ever been read to them at any point in the process.
In your investigation, were you able to determine whether or not these kinds of practices about which we've just heard were being used in other regions of the country?
I'm going to say no to that because we haven't, as the ATF was saying while they were at the gun show, this is a pilot program that they're going to apply to the rest of the country. That was what they stated to the organizers and to some of the dealers. So I don't believe they've implemented this program yet, but they certainly plan on it. They're using footage that they videoed the floor work at the Showplace shows as a training video now for their young agents as how to spot a straw purchase at a gun show.
Thank you. Mr. White, as a former law enforcement officer, do you think the residency checks are a valuable use of resources to deter or discourage straw purchases, A, and B, would you expect the police or law enforcement to maintain records of what homes they visited to determine who was eligible to purchase a firearm?
To answer A, if there's probable cause, if there's no other reason just then I think it's wrong, then no, I don't agree with the address verification. And yes, if you do go and verify an address, you should maintain that for future purchases.
Ms. Gillis, do your gun shows have a history of being connected to straw purchases or a place for a large number of prohibited persons to purchase guns? Is that the sort of reputation you all have?
No, not at all. Actually,
well, has the ATF ever furnished you with numbers indicating that firearms purchased at your shows end up or wind up in the use of crime?
Actually, we've asked for those numbers since after the August show, right after it, starting August, September, we started requesting the FOIA, presenting those numbers to us. And by our account, from the Virginia State Police records, we have 4 to 5 arrests a year on average over the last 10 years with 45,000 public, their minimum, coming in.
Yeah.
So it's not a high number of people.
Do you know, Mrs. Gillis, whether or not a videotape was made during any of the gun shows?
I know for a fact there was cameras placed in the Showplace building. Bill Crenshaw, the manager of that building, told us so. We found this out because an ATF sent an agent or somebody from ATF up to the Chantilly building, which is called the Dulles Expo Center, and told that individual that he had the permission of the show promoter, which is CNE Gun Shows, Robert S. Elliott, and he said they had permission, and they absolutely did not have permission, and they had. And he said, well, it's when he was speaking to this manager, he told him that they had already had permission and done it twice at the show place, at which point we found out that they had actually done it already and had video of the entire public.
Mr. Lamb, how was this experience different from previous gun shows that you've attended?
Never before.
Never before had that happened to me. I don't think I'd seen it happen to anybody else. I definitely know it had a detrimental effect on the attendance of gun shows. I know personally I wouldn't attend gun shows if I knew that was going to happen.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Gillis, my amber light is showing. I want to yield to Mr. Scott here. Let me conclude with this question. How many fewer weapons were sold that day as a result of the presence of a good number of law enforcement people?
Well, I'd have to suppose that if there were half the public there, then half the number of guns, which would have cost the exhibitors a great deal of money.
Yeah.
I mean, my losses were $14,000, their minimum one show. Theirs were at least $300,000, probably more. Plus, people did not bring in guns because they were afraid to
and let the record show that I beat the red light. I recognize the distinguished gentleman from Brazil.
Ms. Gillis, is the Virginia's one gun a month law in effect at a gun show?
Yes, it is.
What paperwork needs to be completed to purchase a firearm at a gun show?
You go to a dealer and you fill out a form 4473 and an SP 65, which is the Virginia State Police background check.
And is there an instantaneous check right there?
Supposed to be. We've experienced very long delays when this residency check process started up to 3 hours for residents, people in Richmond, and minorities and women also.
What happened? Say that again.
People that were that lived in Richmond, those mostly, anybody that lived in Richmond had a three-hour delay or so at the beginning of the residency checks back in May of 2004. And in July of 2004, it speeded up a little more, I think, because they had more personnel. But exhibitors complained that, and we observed also, that there was profiling of blacks and also of women.
And you said the dealers have, if you buy from a dealer, you have a background check. If you buy from someone who is not, quote, a dealer, do you have a background check?
No, there are private sales from individuals to individuals.
At the gun show.
Right, right.
In the gun show, not the parking lot sales.
If I catch one in the parking lot, I run him off or make him come in and buy a table.
Mr. White, you had indicated that the presence of the ATF has been a positive thing at gun shows. Is that, did I understand you right?
Yes, sir.
And does it help with the parking lot situation? Are they out in the parking lot too?
I'm inside, sir. I'm not sure what they do in the parking lot. I will say that we had people come in. I've had my life threatened. I've had people get on the phone and call up their boys, if you will, to an unhappy purchase, and he was going to call his guys to come straighten things out. But since ATF has been involved in the law enforcement presence there, we haven't had that sort of clientele. So it has been a positive thing.
Okay. Ms. McComas, you indicated that many people had a follow-up visit after the gun show. And
in Pittsburgh, that's, yes, sir. They follow up about a week later. In Richmond, they were doing it during the show. They were actually holding the purchase up.
And you suggested that there was the racial profiling going on?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Anyone who was a minority, they picked up their tail, if you will, and just literally followed them through the gun show. When they stopped at a table, the agents would literally stack one side or the other and watch what they were doing. If they started to purchase one, they'd ask them why they were buying it. What were they buying it for? What do you need that gun for? The one young lady said, you know what, I'm out of here. I'll just come back tomorrow. And the agent smarted off and said, that's fine. We're going to be here tomorrow, too. Come on. Come on back. I mean, it was ridiculous. There was absolutely no reason for it except the color of their skin.
Did you see any whites subjected to this?
They did do residency checks on whites, and the one agent said to one of the dealers, well, we have to do some or we're going to catch flack for what we're doing. So, you know, they were trying to cover their tracks. Straight, simple.
Thank you. Mr. Lalame, did you ever find out what your suspension was for?
Yes, sir. It was supposedly for back child support, but it was an error in their computer.
So your license was not under suspension?
No, sir. I had to go back to DMV that following Monday, and I got my license.
Did DMV, in fact, have your license as suspended?
No, sir.
Let me ask the question again. Did DMV have your license as under suspension?
I got it Monday. It wasn't under suspension. I didn't have to pay any kind of fees. I had to pay a $10 loss license. So it was supposed to have been an error at the Department of Social Services.
But the DMV had your license recorded as suspended, although it shouldn't have been suspended.
I guess so, sir, yes.
Okay. So when the police said it was suspended, it was in fact suspended.
Yes, I guess that's the only good thing that came out of what happened. I found that out. I was able to correct it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. The distinguished gentleman from Florida is recognized for 5 minutes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Gellis, about how many gun shows a year do you participate in?
I produce 15 now a year.
Okay, and this is the first experience you've had where ATF and the state police, in a consistent manner, you felt were abusive or harassing customers and clientele.
Right. I mean, ATF agents have, for years, walked through as customers, and I'm sure doing investigations, those kind of things. Virginia State Police, there are always assigned in the state of Virginia state law that they have to have one person, one Virginia State trooper at the show. In case there's any kind of problem with the background check, they can arrest them. And we provide a room and telephone lines and let the Virginia State Police come in and do background checks on site at most of the shows. We have facilities to do it.
At any of the shows that you have done, other than helping with background checks, are there other problems that either ATF or state police need to deal with? You know, do you tend to have bar fights or riots or, you know, they're just a normal crowd, business type crowd?
Most of my crowd is very clean. They're families. My main customer is a white male in his, a middle-aged white male that's college educated, and they're usually from rural areas, and they're wealthier than the average citizen.
But the reason for state police and ATF typically is the reasons that Mr. White has outlined, the advantages of having them on site.
Right. Now, we don't have gangs congregating in our shows.
Right.
I am sure anybody who draws 5,000 to 7,000 people, and one of my shows draws 11,000 people, there are going to be a few people in those shows that are bad apples that need to be policed, no doubt about it. But it's better to do it undercover and not, and do it covertly than overtly and scare off the entire public.
But you testified that, in your opinion, women and minorities were especially profiled by the ATF.
And that is true. We did observe that, and I had many exhibitors complain about it, and we had public call afterwards and complain about it, and I had emails about it. And the racial profiling is certainly important and should be noticed, and also women. I mean, I haven't heard much outcry about that, but the main thinking was that they were purchasing for their felon boyfriend.
I had another, the other group that you mentioned being profiled were people in Richmond. I think Mr. White indicated that too. Now, I don't know that. Can you just tell me briefly, is the population at the gun show that day from Richmond disproportionately black, for example, or women or other minority, or was this a geographic bias alone, in your opinion?
Some of it was a geographic bias for the Richmond area, because I think that's just the way their operation was set up, that they had police to go to those homes.
Repeat that, but I didn't hear your question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my question was, for example, if Richmond had been, if the Richmond customers had been disproportionately black, for example, and Richmond customers were being targeted because of their residency, then that could be a racial profiling effort in and of itself. I guess that was my question.
Actually, most of the people that attend the shows are white.
Including from Richmond.
From Richmond. Richmond is 60%.
I don't even know. Your Richmond customers that day were similar to the general profile of your other customers, roughly.
Roughly. Most of the customers are white. We have a small percentage of blacks that attend. Richmond itself is 65% black. But
Did anybody mention, Mr. Lalim, I know that we probably don't have any lawyers, let alone civil rights lawyers there, but anybody mention that it is a federal crime to deny women or minorities their civil rights? And, you know, a lot of people, I got friends in the press that read the First Amendment and stop. They think the civil rights are over. They never get to the Second Amendment. But has anybody ever mentioned to the ATF, Mr. Swan, or anybody else at the ATF, that denying civil rights, including the right to bear arms, is a federal crime? Section 1865, anybody?
We didn't state it quite that way, but we went for three meetings with John Malone, who was the ASAC for the region, which means over Virginia, Maryland, and D.C., and we did just that. We said, you know, they're profiling. They can't do this, and the answer was the problem is 90% black.
Well, I trust that any of you that have asked for information, including Ms. McComas, from the ATF, none of your requests have been answered. You haven't been given a profile of the people arrested or detained?
No, we haven't been given a conviction rate, which is actually the most important stat. If they're going to spend all this money and manpower, they should have something at the end of it. They should have some convictions, and they haven't been able to show a single one.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Scott, I would suggest that you know, perhaps we do a letter to the ATF and request this information, because profiling people on their Second Amendment rights, whether they're women or black or another protected minority,
and a conspiracy to do that is a very significant allegation, but it's a mere allegation. It's a bare assertion unless we have some evidence. And with that, I'll yield back to Dallas.
If the general will suspend, we have done that, and the ATF will appear before us at the conclusion of the President's Day work period. I thank the gentleman. We've been joined by the gentlelady from Texas. Good to have you with us, Sheila. And in order of appearance, the gentleman, distinguished gentleman from Massachusetts, recognized for 5 minutes.
I thank the chairman, and I didn't intend to stay for this hearing, but I find it rather fascinating. Ms. McComas,
yes,
these must be the dumbest ATF agents in the entire agency.
You just want to shake them and say, go.
I mean, I'm not saying I disbelieve you, but I am absolutely shocked that they could be that stupid articulate, you know. It's almost to the point where it's difficult to believe. In my former career, I was a prosecutor in the greater Boston area, and my office worked well with the ATF. We served on a variety of task forces. And let me be very clear, I have never heard of an experience like the one that you recount. But you all seem to be in agreement. It's just mind-boggling. And I just heard the chairman indicate that we would have testimony from the ATF. I should express my disappointment to the chair and to the ranking member, because what will happen is that your testimony is very, very similar, and I only wish that we had a representative from the ATF here to listen to what you say and to respond, either to deny or explain or have an opportunity, and rather than have a bifurcated series of hearings. But again, my own experience is such that I would conclude, if I didn't hear you, that this is just a story. It's made up. But obviously you're under oath, and I accept what you say as being, but this has to be an aberration.
I've worked with some excellent ATF agents. I honestly have. There's some of them that I have genuine respect for. This was not down to the field agents. Let's make that clear. Whoever was running this show was overboard.
Are we speaking about one particular instant?
The Richmond gun show sting went on for 16 months total.
I have no problems with a sting, but I think you... or maybe it was Ms. Gellers that indicated a good sting is going to be done in a way that is covert, that, you know, no one will be aware of it until the end of, to the conclusion of the investigation. I mean, this is not a sting. This is, I can also see having presence at a gun show, simply to serve as deterrence to those who might want to circumvent the laws. Having police presence obviously can play a positive role if done in such a way that respect for those who are in compliance with the law is demonstrated. I read the testimony while we're waiting here from Mr. White, and let me direct a few questions at Mr. White so I just don't keep rambling on here, but you indicate that there was a display of gang activity that largely seems to have ceased as a result of ATF presence.
Yes, sir. In the beginning,
so it does have a positive. It does have a positive impact
when it's regulated and when it's done properly with probable cause. The gang problem has pretty much disappeared. The problem of every woman that makes a purchase, every woman that comes to my table to buy a gun, is automatically a straw purchaser. I sell custom firearms, target weapons, tactical weapons, and we sit and speak with these people, talk to the ladies, and you know, find what they're actually doing with them, what we need to fit them with. But every woman that shows up is automatically a straw purchase. That date in August, if a woman showed up at my table, she was surrounded by law enforcement, not just ATF, but other agencies were involved in that too. And if the lady walked off and suddenly stopped, they'd have bumped into each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their surveillance methods were pitiful.
But what we're talking about here is enforcement. You know, I'm not saying that this is an unimportant issue, because there are rights that are at stake here. Yet at the same time, you know, we have a responsibility on this committee and on the full committee that deals with a wide array of issues. You should have been here this morning. It was a rather interesting discussion about those that, if you will, advocate for aggressive oversight and those that, those that don't. And I believe in aggressive oversight to ensure individual liberties, but at the same time, I'd like to just know if this is an aberrational situation. But while I'm here, I come from a different part of the country, the Northeast. I think you can probably guess that we have different state policies in terms of gun issues. And I think that's true of most large urban centers. You know, I want more ATF agents up in Massachusetts. Bring them on, because they can make a difference in terms of our homicide rates, and they have. And we're rather stringent and strict in terms of the issues of guns. And let me direct this to Mr. White again, having read your statement. I would infer that you support the background check rules. You would require them for unlicensed sellers as well. Is that a fair conclusion?
I think there needs to be more scrutiny on the people that come in with a private collection. I've seen private collections grow. These guys are buying guns from individuals and putting them right back out for sale. To me, that's not a private collection. I think there needs to be more scrutiny on that because there is no paperwork done there. As a federal firearms dealer, I'm required to do paperwork, maintain the paperwork, and any time a weapon that I've sold is involved in any sort of crime and ends up in any police evidence room, I get an ATF trace, which I've only had one in the years I've been in business. Take an ATF trace and I have to say who that gun was sold to. So we don't want to sell guns to people that they don't belong with. Certainly I want to keep them out of those hands because my friends and family are out there on the street. I don't want guns getting in the wrong
hands. I have a particular concern, you know, about gun shows. Not that they can't be run well and done in compliance with the law. Coming down to Richmond and getting out in the parking lot and buying a gun and coming back up to Boston.
Mr. Bill, I don't want to cut you off, but we need to hear.
I'll yield back, and I know we have some.
We have a vote at 5:30, but Ms. Jackson Lee, before I recognize you, if I may.
Can I just have one? Is there anybody from the ATF here?
Well, before I recognize Ms. Jackson Lee, folks, I want to reiterate what I said at the outset. I don't want anybody to leave here thinking that it's time to disarm or decommission the ATF. The ATF serves a good purpose, and we will hear from them subsequently. We have some of the questions that they asked to be voiced today have been voiced. I want to ask one more, and if you all have questions you want us to ask the ATF, we'd be glad to hear from you within the next 7 days, during which time this record will remain open. But I want to urge all of you folks, don't leave this hearing room thinking that the ATF is a bunch of no-good so-and-sos, because they do serve a good purpose. Now, what I've heard today is in the case that maybe they went beyond the pale, but we'll hear from them when they have their day before this subcommittee as well. I'm now pleased to recognize the gentlelady from Texas, Mrs. Lee. Mr. Delahunt, if you would, if we beat the 5:30 deadline, if you want to continue your question, you may do so. All right, thank you, sir. The gentlelady from Texas.
But he hasn't run out of steam. Thank you, Mr. Delahunt. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and to ranking member for an important committee hearing. And I might track Mr. Delahunt's outrage, but also suggest, and I know I have a good friend from North Carolina, I might be able to convince him. We were here just a few hours ago talking about the overreach of the federal government and the need for oversight and investigation. With this hearing as a backdrop, let's hope that we can secure both bipartisan effort in making sure that things work. And that we exercise our oversight. So I want to thank Mr. Scott for bringing this matter to our attention. I know that it occurred in his jurisdiction, and he should be complimented and applauded. I would like to put it, however, in the context that you've come to us so that we can fix whatever the elements are that take away from Project Exile, which is a project that has been supported by the majority in this Congress, which happened to be my Republican friends, and I think it's important to emphasize that it's the concept, Mr. White, of a joint task force, where, of course, you have local law enforcement inviting the FT officers in, and I also think it's important to note that the record shows, and my facts are showing me, that there were only about 6 to 8 ATF officers, and the rest were all local law enforcement. So the next step that I would like, or at least I'd like to add, let us try to make sure that that task force works well, and who am I to tell local law enforcement that they need 40 versus 20, but that may be a reasonable response to draw in the excessiveness or the appearances of such. Might I also say that race permeates society, and I am as much in consternation over racial profiling on buses and trains and planes and on highways, and I would welcome the support of many of you on some extra work that we have to do, which includes passing hate crimes legislation that may help us on that idea. But certainly, I know that we can have sufficient oversight with the ATF that would not be the mode of their operation. So I will join you in that concern and work with our committee to ensure that that happens. Let me offer some thoughts and like to pursue a line of questioning that Mr. Delahunt. But let me quickly, Ms. Gellis, is it Gellis?
Yes, it is Gellis.
Having the gun show operator, I'm sure that you see a lot of different scenes and populations. And so I would ask whether or not you have seen, or do you believe that there is significant criminal activity that occurs at gun shows in the Richmond area?
No, I don't think there's a lot of criminal activity. I know that you'll see some people walk in that'll have gang-looking clothes on and that kind of thing. I actually hire 2 Henrico County police to sit at the front to deter this kind of person from coming in. I tell them to follow them through, make them feel unwelcome. The Virginia State Police is there. They also do the background check. There are not a large number of gang people that congregate in these shows. So I don't believe that's the case. I think that we need some policing. I don't think ATF is all bad at all. I think that we do need them because we can't police ourselves. When we have a problem, we need them there to take care of it. But most of the time, no, it is not a large amount of those people.
Let me just say that I just came from a Homeland Security hearing where intelligence is very important, and one of the things that we've discovered that everyone who is in the business of doing wrong doesn't necessarily look that way. And I want to applaud you for, you know, keeping a clean shot. But let me put this on the record say to you that you did say no, but you would might be surprised to find out that because of the law enforcement activities of ATF and the Virginia State Police at the Richmond area gun shows, during 2004 and 2005, 25 criminal cases were recommended for prosecution for violations of federal law. The ATF reports that these cases have resulted in the conviction of 19 defendants so far, and the convictions were such crimes as possession of firearms in relation to a crime of violence or drug trafficking, 18 U.S.C. Section 922, possession of firearms by a convicted felon, and possession with intent to distribute a controlled substance. So ATF has also told this subcommittee that since May 2004, firearms used in four homicides have been linked to two transactions occurring at Richmond area gun shows. So my point is that I buy into what you're saying. Let's help fix it. But this is an effective program. Let's help them not do some of the things that both of us would find outrageous. But there have been notations of criminal activity, and in fact, there have been convictions. And I'd ask the indulgence of an additional minute to ask Mr. White, Chairman.
Without objection.
Mr. White, and thank you, Ms. Jones, very much for your, with a little bit of humor, Mr. White, this hasn't been a good week for guns. I'm from Texas, so you know we've had some misshots and quails and misidentification of individuals that have unfortunately been at the wrong end of a battle. But I do understand the value of business and doing things the right way. You have made a point that I think is very important in pursuing because it's the gun show loophole. And you have the federal documentation, federal paperwork. I assume you're still in business.
Yes, ma'am.
And so why don't you just expand on this question of do you think that all gun buyers at gun shows should undergo background checks, regardless of whether they're buying from licensed or unlicensed sellers, and would you support legislation requiring such checks at gun shows? Now, you know, legislation is a heady word, so why don't I just focus you on the value of undergoing it, and you could put in a personal experience that you're still functioning, you're still standing, you're still selling, I hope, and you're still doing it the legal way. Mr. White.
You know, there is the dealers there, or not dealers, the people there that sell their private collections. There are no, they don't even get a driver's license number. They don't know who they sold the gun to. Once the gun's gone, it's gone. You don't know where it went. We do the paperwork. Yes, our business does very well. I've had many young men, black men, whatever, come in dressed like gang members, and I sit there and talk to them. I'm not in such a hurry to make money. My income doesn't depend on my business. And I sit there and talk to the young man and find out that one of these guys was military. Mm. He had just got home from Iraq. He just wanted to dress like the rest of the guys and fit in. He didn't want to be the military guy. He wanted to look like everybody else. And in talking with him, I felt very comfortable selling this young man a gun. There are others that have come in, and I've felt very uncomfortable and said, no, thank you. Leave. I'm not going to sell you a gun. I don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like there should be more scrutiny paid to these, you know, things that take place in the parking lot, which is what that's out of the promoter's control. And inside, I really think there should be some... at least identification as to what firearm you sold and where it went.
So if we took your good advice designed some legislation that closes that loophole, that would be a credible approach to take to include the guys, if you will, out in the parking lot and elsewhere that may not have the scrutiny intent that you have, the good intent that you have.
I'm not exactly sure how you do that, but yes, ma'am, I think it would make a difference.
And my final point is that you found that the ATF can work comfortably in these scene situations, but any oversight we give to them would be welcome as well.
Yes, ma'am. I think, that, and I put it in my statement, that there needs to be a clear plan of action. There needs to be an operational plan, and the operational plan needs to include what the outside agencies are going to do. I've supervised young police officers, and I know how they get. You get a whole bunch of them. They're busy. They want something to do. So they begin to expand outside of the operational plan. This supervisor's paying attention to this group, and you've got all these other guys doing other things. When you have 50 guys to supervise, and there's six ATF agents, that's a little impossible.
Gentlemen, this time's expired.
And I thank, Mr. White, and I thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. White,
yes, sir.
Finally, since you did not consume all of your 5 minutes, I'm going to extend what Jackson Lee was pursuing, and I think you may have already answered it. And my question to you is, in your opinion, as a former law enforcement officer, is it your belief that there was adequate supervision over the agents who were at the show?
No. At the one at the raceway, the one in August, is that the?
Yeah.
No, sir, I think there was a lack of supervision. There were a lot of young officers there, and I don't think there was enough supervision. That's why they got in the trouble they were in.
Well, when I suggested that you all, if you have suggested questions for us to put to ATF, let us know in the 7-day period. Now, here is another question, final question, that was requested that I put to you all by the ATF, and I want to direct it to Ms. Gillis. Ms. Gellis, I am told that you and other gun show promoters recently participated in what was a productive meeting, I'm told, with senior ATF officials. If you will, share with us some of those agreements that were reached with the ATF and about any initiatives on which you and your colleagues will be partnering with ATF in the future.
We discussed the residency check, and Michael Bouchard in that meeting said that they would continue residency checks with probable cause. That's my understanding, that they are not going to continue the residency check as a blanket kind of effort at the shows. In other words, every individual that comes in the show is not going to have a residency check performed on him. Also,
yeah.
I guess that's all we actually covered in that meeting.
Do you feel it was productive?
It was somewhat productive. I would like to see the conviction rates from the May of 2004 till now. Ms. Jackson Lee brought up that there were 56 arrests or 56 charges, I believe. We'd like to see how many convictions actually came out of that. We'd like y'all to get the FOIA or that information the best you can from ATF. 56 out of, since May of 2004, we pulled 45,000 people through that. That would be, 56 charges would be 0.001%. So that's not really good use of money and law enforcement's valuable resources. I don't think you need 450 law enforcement assigned to a single little show like that.
Well, I think this has been a productive hearing, Mr. Scott. Again, I thank you for working with our staff on this. As I said to you all earlier, the ATF will be before us on February the 28th, so that's for your information. And I want to repeat again, folks, we're not here to buggy whip the ATF, but we want to examine all relevant evidence, which I think we've done at least partially today, and we will await the ATF's appearance as well.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd ask unanimous consent to put the rest of my questions, written questions, into the record and ask for the ability of the witnesses to provide answers.
Without objection, that will be done.
Thank you.
And we want to thank the witnesses and those in the audience as well for your attendance today and for your testimony presented. In order to ensure a full record and adequate consideration, what do you want to say? In order to ensure a full record and adequate consideration of this important issue, the record will remain open for additional submissions for a 7-day period. Any written questions from any member of the subcommittee want to submit to you all must also be submitted within that 7-day period. This concludes the oversight hearing of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, Part 1, Gun Show Enforcement. Thank you for your cooperation, and the subcommittee stands adjourned. Thank you, Bobby.